The funny thing is, I had that game and I never played it, and I traded it in, wrapping intact.
I love being a troll because you just get to piss so many people off.
What would you rather be inside of? A giant robot or magical girl?
Now we're stuck with you.
I'm pretty sure I'm on a higher plane of existence than you.
I was just about to bring that up. Nintendo, I'm not even going to say anything.
We shall give you a quality show today. I'll be giving you at least 78%.
Launching!
Hello, everybody. Indeed, welcome to the Anavision podcast. This is our EXT episode on the third and final Kizu Monogatari movie, Reiketsu Hen. I would normally introduce myself as Jero, but because we have guests that just go by the regular name, I'm gonna go along with it. I'm Justin.
Oh, that sounds weird.
Yeah, that does, right? But I always think about, like, with esports now, as we quickly diverge off the topic of
right.
NXT.
Because it wouldn't be Anavision otherwise.
It's always like, you know, John, like, Destroyer 420 Simpson or something. It just seems, like, ridiculous when you read about that in text.
Right. Because it's like they insert their, like, online tag in between the real name, and you're just like,
right.
It sounds like a really lame, you know, like, middle name. I guess that would make me Giancarlo today.
Right.
Giancarlo.
You could just call me
John.
JK.
JK. Yeah. And then we have Chris here with us.
Hello.
Who you heard recently on the Nier Automata DXT episode. And then D is here also.
I'm back, baby.
Yeah, he was on an episode back in the fall season of anime, I believe.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. So this is our EXT on Kizu Monogatari Reiketsu Hen, the third and final movie and EXT. So we've finally seen the movie in full and have a full like understanding of like the story and comparing it to the book and stuff.
It only took a year and a half to watch one movie.
I mean, it's just like 3 hours,
It's better than some things, though, so I can't complain too much.
Like, mind you, this is not me complaining, because we actually got all three parts, and we got to see them in a movie theater.
Right.
You know, as it was intended to be seen, so, like, I'm happy, like, as long as that continues to be the trend.
Yeah, and it wasn't, like, 3 full years that we had to wait.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Lord of the Rings or something. We had at least, like, 8 months in between.
And like, the movie, like, compared to their Japan release, like, it was, like, maybe a month or two behind their Japanese release in theater. So, like, really good.
It really wasn't. It wasn't bad at all.
Yeah.
I'm still hoping that I can take my grandkids to see 4.4 in theaters.
Surprisingly, he says, he pretends, like he's working on it. Because, you know, he's doing Godzilla now, so, you know.
He's rich off that Godzilla money, so now he can make Evangelion.
It's kind of satisfying to say that we can finally say that we've seen the Kizu Monogatari movie, because ever since Bakemono, even.
Which was 2009.
Right, yeah. We saw, like, very early images for the movie, and we're like, oh, this sounds really cool. It's like the origin story of Arataragi.
In fact, the first thing you see in Bakemonogatari, the very first episode, that opening sequence is from Kizu. It's basically a condensed version of the entire Kizu.
It's basically a Cliff Notes version of Kizu Monogatari.
Yeah, it's like this really fast montage, and you see it like in a split or like, you know, maybe for like a minute. But it's the entire story of Kizu Monogatari, so it's nice to finally have it fleshed out.
right, yeah. So let's kind of talk about the events of the movie. Mm-hmm. I believe we start off the first scene with Arataragi and Oshino talking after he's beaten Guillotine Cutter, and then that's where we find out that a big reason of why she wasn't as strong as anybody would have expected her to be at the time was because Oshino had stolen her heart.
Yeah. Do you want to just go through all the plot points and then discussion?
Okay, we can make that. Yeah, we can go through that. All right, so Oshino gives Arataragi the heart, and then Kisshot eats that, and then she becomes like the 27-year-old, which I believe is what the book says.
Yeah,
27.
Because like her previous form was like a 17-year-old, so now she's like an adult. She's basically back to her original form.
Right, and then
in all her majestic glory.
Right. Yeah. And then Arataragi's ready to turn back to a human, but she kind of stalls him, and he kind of gets caught up in her pace a little bit, where he's, you know, maybe thinking about it a little bit. And then there is the scene where she eats guillotine cutter, and that's when things kind of go crazy in his mind. And he's like getting ready to, you know, he knows he has to fight her and defeat her.
That's when he comes to the realization that vampires eat people. Yeah. and he comes to a second realization, oh my god, I'm a vampire.
Right, yeah.
Not only that, it's also that she's been doing this for a really long time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like she's been starving for centuries, so he's like, okay. So how many people has she eaten over the years? Like,
and then you realize that, you know, like he realizes that the decision he made was to save a monster. So so basically he feels responsible for any deaths that happen after that point. Like it was almost as if he's did it himself.
Right. And then there's the scene in the school shed with he and Hanakawa where he's kind of nervous about the whole thing, but then he's like, I want to grow up your breasts because, you know, Kiss Shot has huge breasts and they're going to distract me during a battle, so I need to grow up yours.
Yeah.
And then he wimps out on it.
Mm-hmm. And Hanakawa does not let him, you know, get off easily with that one.
Right, yeah.
She's like, oh man. Anyway, let's move on to the next point.
Well, actually, I don't, because what if he did grope her? Like, that changes it a lot, wouldn't it? Like
probably. The scene that we got showed how it would have played out was amazing.
Uh-huh.
The fact that...
I think if he would have went through it, their relationship throughout the rest of the series would have been different.
Yeah.
You mean he might have been with Best Girl?
yeah, like he doesn't date Senjo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although Senjo is Best Girl.
You know, this side of the table agrees.
I've always liked vampires, so.
I mean, okay, look. Vampire's on she's on a different tier, you know?
And then the last scene is the big fight, which was what everybody that was watching this movie was looking forward to, and where all the budget was placed in. Not that they weren't, you know, not spending on the early parts of the movie.
That's where you had the action take place, yeah.
Right, yeah.
As opposed to like the metaphorical images that we saw before.
yeah, in the same stadium where we saw the conclusion of the fight versus episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then...
That school rounds has a lot of fights in it. Because even if you go way forward into the series, it's also where he confronts the First Dominion.
Yeah, yeah.
As well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why it's kind of been interesting recently to check out the Monogatari series in chronological order. Mm-hmm. Now that we have so many of them.
Yeah.
Close to all of them. And then after they fight, Oshino comes in, and that's when the very unhappy ending for everybody happens, when he kind of brokers a deal.
Yeah. So, it, you know, now that we're at the end of it, like, we can basically say that this movie is a tragedy.
Yeah.
Like, the beginning of it seems like, you know, a very noble thing for Adaragi to do. And it actually kind of informs his character for the rest of the series, where he has this sort of like savior complex, but it's also a self-sacrifice complex, where his first intention is always, I'll give my life to help, you know, whoever it is that's in danger. And it's not because it's anybody in particular, it's just whoever is in front of him at that time. Mm-hmm. To the point where, like, he saw a dying vampire in front of him, and his initial thought was, well, he was clearly horrified or scared or whatever, but he eventually came to the conclusion of, I can't just let her die.
Yeah.
And you know, saved her life by essentially killing himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the repercussions of that, which he finally realizes in the third part of the movie. So, like, that realization that he suddenly had when he sees her eating guillotine cutter.
He realizes it. Knows that she has to eat, and then he gets even more scared that if he were to stay a vampire, it's going to eventually happen to him as well.
Yeah. How much time do we know had passed since the start of all this?
Two weeks. It was 2 weeks. Yeah, it was basically over the course of spring break. Yeah. So that in between period of second year and third year of high school.
Right. Yeah. So he had avoided as much as he could, like eating.
He didn't since he was a fresh vampire, to say.
Uh-huh.
He didn't feel hungry. And then
you get that foreboding scene at the beginning with Oshino.
So throughout all three movies, Oshino is sitting here like, "Are you hungry yet?" Yeah. And he's always like, "No, I'm not really
concerned about my eating habits."
And then in the third movie, he actually gets to a point where he's like, "Oh, I'm kind of feeling it."
Yeah.
But he doesn't realize that, you know, regular food's not going to cut it at this point.
Right, yeah.
The moment, like, it's really bad because he goes out to get the food to, like, celebrate her being whole again and all that. And, like...
And right, just immediately before that, though, was that scene where they sat down and talked to each other. And that's one of my favorite parts in the book and the movie, is them just having a heart-to-heart talk and just talking. And enjoying each other's company.
Like, they were in a really, really great place in that moment. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you could see that, like, he just dropped. Like, he dropped through the floor when he walked in. And, like, it all dawned on him. But, like, at the same time, he knew on some level. And he just didn't want to address it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, and it's kind of crazy the extent to which he pushed that down.
Like, he rationalized it, you know. Yeah. Or just chose not to acknowledge it.
And then... Like, you know. Well, I guess I'm not going to skip any plot points.
Well, I mean, we already discussed them.
Yeah, so now we're just a free discussion. Yeah. My thing is that...
So,
yeah.
And then when they actually start fighting, and more comes out during the fight, you find out that, like, she only ate Guillotine Cutter so that he would get mad. So that he would fight her.
Yeah. Right.
She showed her true nature as a vampire, because... Even when, like, that talk on the rooftop, that's the thing, like, is that she always had the intention of turning him back into a human. The only thing is that the only way for her to do that was to have him consume her. And she knew that he would never do that to her if he didn't see her as a real, true monster. So that's where the tragedy aspect comes, is that, like, that conversation on the rooftop was more than them just, like, having a chat. Like, it was her last appeal to him to basically spend eternity together. Mm-hmm. Because she was like, you know, she asked him, like, "Do you really want to become human again? Like, you know, we could just stay together." Mm-hmm. And if she had been able to, like, you know, live with him, then she would have had a reason to keep living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because then you find out later that the whole reason she even came to Japan was to find a place to die.
Mm-hmm.
And then throughout the entire fight, Hayakawa kept showing up. He kept saying things that kind of threw it off. Threw Aragi into another confused state. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, in the movie, one plot point we've skipped over is that they went into quite a bit about her previous servant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That she was with, like, you know, way back in, like, feudal Japan or something, and how, you know, he was her servant for only a few years, and then he killed himself.
But and there's the fact that, like, she was he was her partner even before he became a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out in the series later why she was forced to make him a vampire in the first place. But the fact that he couldn't live with being a monster and chose to end his life rather than, you know, to live with her, like, that shock. You know, and the fact that she, like, you know, she knew the way to turn him back into a human, but she, at that time in her life, she couldn't sacrifice herself to return him to being human.
Because that she was only, like, 100 years old at the time.
Yeah, she was still, quote-unquote, young for a vampire.
I kind of find it interesting that these are the people she's prone to opening herself to.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the kind of people who have that moral ambiguity of, "Oh, screw it, I have to eat, so, you know, I'll kill whoever." It's the kind of person who does have those strong morals and who actually, you know, does have that strong personality, who's going to be out to define themselves as they see fit and not sort of just under her thumb.
And, but there's a thing that, like, you know, she had never made a servant before him, right? So, like, it's treated, like, the whole making a servant thing is treated as sort of like a sexual encounter, right? Mm-hmm. So when she calls him her first servant, she's basically saying he was my first partner, like, my first sexual partner. And that, like, that bad experience made it so that she never had another partner again. Like, literally, like, you know, the fact that she had to watch him kill himself or, you know, die, she never made another servant until Aradagi was willing to sacrifice himself for her.
Like, he hates me so much that he would rather kill himself. Yeah, it was a short movie because the fight occupied
a good chunk quite of, it, a bit yeah. of
time.
How do you guys feel about the choice that he made ultimately?
So that's the thing, is that like that was another part of the movie that kind of dragged on a little bit, was that conversation in the shed. There was a lot of good imagery in there though. In particular when Hanakawa was like, you know, trying to convince him to keep going rather than just like to give up and die. Mm-hmm. And you see her like holding on to him and not letting go. And then like the camera will cut and go back to her hands, and there's an extra hand there,
uh-huh.
which if you like weren't paying attention, you would have missed it. But like, then they go back and do it again, and there's like several hands of hers reaching out and grabbing Adaragi, mm-hmm. like showing kind of like that influence that she's having on him. Mm-hmm. But like that scene in there, she basically convinces him to live and to fight, to take responsibility for his decision, right? But then during the fight, there's that revelation of like, she was always gonna like throw the fight and have him kill her. And then like that throws his mind into disarray again, because he doesn't like. Like, he doesn't want to. Yeah, he doesn't want to do that. Like, he doesn't want to kill her.
And it came out that like the only way to get him so mad was to be vampire-like in front of him.
Hmm. Basically, that savior complex comes out again, because, you know, she wanted to die. And he's like, I'm not going to let you die because you want to. You know, like, it sort of contradicts himself, but, like, it's that savior complex that shows up. And they're really stuck in a shitty position, because, like, what can either of them do? That's when Oshido, like, comes in and is like, well, I got a solution that will make no one happy.
Yeah. He was like, it's not going to be a good one, so, you know, you're going to have to live with that. You won't be completely human. She won't be barely a vampire at all.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about him sort of being able to salvage his conscience at the cost of her living a miserable existence. Like, it's...
I think that's why Monogatari is special, though, is because, like, you know, when you watch that first season of Monogatari without the context of Kizu, you see the result, but not the reason. But you see Shinobu, like, you know, as
and it took more than it took like a season and a half.
Yeah, for her to even talk to him.
Yeah, talk to him.
It's because she was sulking.
It became to the point where he almost died again, thanks to Hanakawa.
Yeah,
for her to show up and help him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which shows you that she still cared for him.
So, you know, it took some time, but then, you know, their relationship greatly improved. Yeah. Nisei.
Right. The thing is, the relationship couldn't have improved again if either one of them had died.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, like, maybe it was, the outcome was shitty, you know, like, the fact that the servant basically subjugated the master into becoming, you know, a pet, right? Like, that's exactly how Oshino put it, but... Like, that's what makes it such a tragic story, is that, like,
mm-hmm.
either outcome would have been bad.
He did get the good deal of being able to walk in the sun.
Yeah, right?
Right.
Yeah, it was he's
mostly 99% human.
Yeah.
1% vampire.
The first movie, like, when he just burst into flame.
Yeah.
Holy crap. That scene was amazing, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And like, you saw more of that in the actual fight itself. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, like, I gotta say, like, was astounding. Like, mm-hmm. it was some of the best animation. And you know, just the ridiculousness of it.
Yeah, right. It was much better than I imagined reading it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you're reading it, like, it's very different. Like, you know, they're just talking about how, like, they're standing in front of each other, just, like, swatting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the actual animation was more kinetic. Which brings me to another point. Dee, as someone who didn't read the novels first, what did you think of the trilogy?
I mean, I still haven't read the novel. Yeah. So I can't really give you a view of it in terms of like a comparative view.
Yeah.
But as someone who's watched a lot of it, it answered a lot of questions. And, I mean, that was kind of the biggest thing, is that you see these relationships and you don't understand what really drives them,
yeah.
And what kind of laid the groundwork for it. And, like, putting that puzzle together was incredibly satisfying.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure. So, did the novels cover this stuff before it went into the Bakke story, or?
So, Bakemonogatari and Kizu came out at roughly the same time, but okay. Kizu actually came out after Bakke.
Gotcha.
But, like, even the author himself is like, you can read either story first. Mm-hmm. You know, because, like, literally one, like Kizu takes place before Bakemonogatari, mm-hmm. and you know, but like it is revelatory, right? So yeah. like it's the kind of thing where like you watch it or read it, and then you go back and experience the rest of the story, and it just gives you more context for which to enjoy it.
I actually kind of like that, to be honest. Kind of going back and going, okay, this makes sense now. Like it kind of gives you a chance to go back and revisit the series with new eyes as well.
Yeah, and like it, you know, like the whole Adedagi having a savior complex is something that it comes up time and time again like, throughout the series.
He tries to save everybody.
Yeah,
like first it was the crab.
Senjo. Yeah, and then Hitachi. Mayoi.
Yeah, and then it goes to the snake.
Mm-hmm.
Then it goes to the cat.
The fact that Suruga was trying to kill him and he was still trying to save her.
Yeah.
You know, like...
And then it goes back to the cat twice.
Mm-hmm.
It goes, Hanekawa has two arcs. And then it just keeps going. And then it goes back to the snake again.
Hmm. What I liked about, like, you know, the context is that, you know, I go back and rewatch... Vertical Inc. has started publishing the Bakemonogatari novels in English. Right. So they did Kizu first, which is how I was able to read it before watching the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're finally getting Bakemonogatari. Yeah. Volume 3 just came out.
Right, so that's all three of those, right?
Yeah, so that's the entirety of Bakemonogatari. So, you know, going back and reading that first part with that focused on Sendogahara and Mayoi, like, it gave me a new perspective, like how... You know, like, Sendogahara was telling Adedagi about why she actually fell in love with him in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, he was trying to tell her basically, like, you don't need to fall in love with me because you're indebted to me, because I helped you. And she's like, no, I fell in love with you because it wasn't me. Like, you didn't help me because it was me. You would have helped anyone. And she's like, that's why I fell in love with you. And like, to me, that makes their relationship stronger.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, because she admired, like, she's in love with him for like that.
For what he stands for.
Exactly.
He
is. And the fact that like, they're...
Not what he's done.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. I don't know, like, and there's also a very different way, like, Kizu Monogatari, the way it portrays Adedagi and Tsubasa's relationship is very sexual. Like, and to the point, yeah. what I mean by that is that, like, their attraction to each other is purely on a physical level.
Right.
I don't know if I'd agree with that.
Some flirtation.
Well, I mean, there's flirtation, but, like... I don't think it's purely physical. Like, they actually have great chemistry. Like,
they got chemistry, but I'm saying, like, they're, like, throughout... The entirety of Kizu Monogatari, there's not only gaze on Adedagi's part, but there's also on Tsubasa's part. Like for example, when he takes his shirt off in the second movie,
yeah.
and she's just like soaking it in because he's got that vampire physique.
Like it's I'll give you this. It's very present. Like it's at the forefront, but I don't think it's completely the foundation of
right.
it. Like I don't think you can just attribute the whole. Connection that they have to the physicality. I mean, like,
but there was a strong like.
It's there. I'm not saying it's not there at all. It's definitely there. But I don't think that's
because I mean, think about it. Like, okay, so what was the first thing that Adedagi did after he met Tsubasa? What was the very first thing he did afterwards? He went to the store to buy a porn mag because right, he couldn't get the sight of her underwear out of his mind.
No, you're right. You're right.
So like their whole from their first encounter, like their whole thing is literally on a you know like lust. I mean, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying like that's a different way that it contrasts from Sendogahara.
No, I can definitely see that. I feel like you're kind of setting aside a lot of the dialogue they share as well.
I'm saying it's there, but it's like their dialogue has sort of like a playful, yeah. like teasing nature, like you know, like
yes,
they're basically flirting.
Most of it would be sexual, I think, but also throughout the entirety of while Adonagi couldn't look at the sun, she was the thing that was grounding him to still wanting to be human.
Right, right.
Throughout the entire thing,
like, that's why throughout the rest,
admiration that I think is a big part of their relationship.
Yeah. But I'm saying like that's part of why throughout the rest of the series Adedagi always refers to her as his savior, and that he essentially puts her on a pedestal after that point.
Yeah,
like,
he does. No,
he doesn't. Yeah, like throughout really the entire does. Time, Hanekawa was waiting for him to make good on that promise.
There are times where I feel like he almost thinks that he's not good enough for her. Like,
that's the thing. That's what he actually thinks.
100%. And even, like, you even see that with Sendra Gahara. The only difference is that Sendra Gahara acted. Yeah. And was like, right. I want to, like, you know, if you go back and read Mayoi Snail, like, you know, they have a conversation about, like, what real love is and parents and stuff like that. And how, like, love is work. That, like, you know, after you get married and you're, you know, you're living together, it takes hard work to stay in love. And to her, she's like, you know, like, basically when she confesses to him, she's like, I want to work to get to know you. And that's, to me, I feel like that's a little bit different. You know, that's the defining difference between her and Tsubasa.
I agree with that. Tsubasa had a whole mental thing to deal with, though, with her family.
And Tsubasa has her own, like, her own issues that are only, like, slightly touched on in Kizumonogatari, mm-hmm. because like
it takes some time for her to actually for her story to develop on her side. Like, sure, she helps Ayari throughout all his horrible parts, but she kind of hides it away, doesn't address anything until like 3 seasons in.
but you know, speaking of Kizu specifically, right? Like, so Adaragi asked himself, like, why is this girl who I've literally never talked to before before this point? Like, because, you know, at this point, Kizu takes place over 2 weeks. And it starts with her and him, like, talking for the very first time. Hmm. He, in his mind, he's wondering, why is this girl who I've never talked to before, except for once, now, why is she so fixated on like, helping me, on, like, you know, like, you know, trying to save me? And he finds that admirable, but at the same time he finds it creepy because of how, like, she was talking about how, like, she would gladly become his food, mm-hmm. you know, if it would save him or whatever. Like, even
Oshino touched on that subject. He was like, you need to watch out. Just
kind of president. Odd, because I feel like she's not unlike him in some regards, and so I feel like he's almost looking at an aspect of himself that's more exaggerated and finding it unsettling. Mm-hmm. Which I think is actually really, I never thought about it, but that's actually kind of interesting.
But the thing about that is that even Oshino, like, mentions it and finds her creepy. Like, to the point where, like, if you really, like, dig deep, the whole reason that he even, you could say that the reason that the story even started was that she wanted to meet a vampire. Mm. And, like, because that their very first conversation, before he becomes a vampire, she says, I would like to meet a vampire. And then eventually he goes and becomes a vampire, and then she runs into him in the street later again. She met a vampire. Yeah. So, like, that, I think that's why Oshino always found her, you know, kind of creepy, unsettling,
Really paints her in a whole new way from what we've known from
Because in Bakke, you see her just as, like, the perfect girl, right? But, like, there's, the thing is that what I love about Nisio Isin's writing is that, like, there's always more below that, you know, beneath the surface level. Like how Nadeko, you know, is just the cutesy little girl, but then you find out that she's really fucked up in the head.
Right, yeah.
You know. Yeah, that was a whole can of worms.
Which is for another episode.
Another, like, if you have a Bakke episode on that.
Snakes.
But yeah, overall, what do we think of the 3 movies as a whole?
I am really looking forward to watching these again together, back to back to back, because I think Steve, who is kind of faded away
from Monogatari,
I think he might like them if they're all 3 together.
Yeah,
because they all, like, a lot of the other ones, like, they've done in small series, like the Tsurugu.
I'm forgetting. Hanamonogatari.
Where those were okay, but I don't think they have quite the impact that people that watched Bakemono felt, and I think Kizu has that. So I'm really looking forward to watching all 3 of them together.
Yeah.
Again.
Same. Like, that's you know, that's why in part I've been collecting the Blu-rays and stuff, but like, Kizu in particular is one that I want to go back to and watch back to back to back.
So, would you guys recommend that someone actually start with Kizu, or do you think it is a better experience to sort of backtrack and gain an understanding after the fact?
I mean, like, I would say that either is a good starting point. You could, like, if you're going to start the Monogatari series, either watch Kizu first or watch Bakemonogatari first.
I feel like it kind of depends on who you're talking to. say, like, our roommate Trey, I wouldn't tell him to go watch Bakke first because Trey, there's just
first because he'd be there's like, just so there's much too much talking and there's not enough action
in Bakke that I can see it not grabbing the attention of a lot of people. But if you watch Kizu first, Kizu was had it was equal parts.
Yeah,
it's I think Kizu would be more to get into, I should say. Than Bakke would.
And like, Kizu, like, and I've, you know, I've seen some opinions where, like, Kizu is a very different story from Bakemonogatari. Kizu Monogatari and Bakemonogatari. Because Kizu, like, as described by the author himself, is his shonen battle manga story. Yeah. And it the way the story plays out, and we mentioned this with, like, when we talked about the novel in the first EXT, is that it's very much like a video game. You know, like, he has to fight the bosses in order to get the rewards to complete the quest. You know, like it's literally a three-act structure, which I think is why it served. You know, the movie worked well to split into three parts.
Right.
But yeah, like Kizu is more psychological, like
and kind of procedural.
Yeah, like and there's like there's like in terms of action, like, there's no real like fights. You know, like the closest thing I would say was when he fought Suruga. Kambaru and like when she was trying to kill him with the rainy devil or whatever.
Right.
But again, like I would never call Monogatari an action series. You know, but but Kizu would fall in that genre.
Yeah. All right. So that has been our impressions on Kizu Monogatari Reiketsu Hen. This is the last of our EXTs for Kizu Mono movies. I do recommend checking out the light novel. If you're interested, it's available for like $11 online or something.
Yeah, sometimes you can find it for cheaper. Yeah, and they're good releases. I just like the quality of the books themselves, so you know it's good for collectors.
It's nice to have something that's formatted nicely, isn't like some PDF file. I got to email myself and then put it on the iPad.
You know, sometimes it's nice to read a real book.
So thank you for listening, Animevision.org. The website, of course, you can check out all of our EXTs and social links to Facebook and all that. For Amro, Chris, D, I'm Justin. We will see you next time on the Animevision Podcast. Believe it.
Like he still called me Amro.
Giancarlo.
Sounds weird.